And please note that, just like last time, I have zero interest in Hancock's personality, because this is not about his personality, or my personality, thanks for your interest. It's about the facts.
Oh, just the facts, huh? I sure hope I don't find you misleading your audience and withholding facts from them. That would sure be out of character for you, wouldn't it?
Playing tricks is my game, but maybe you don't know my name. I deceive everyone just to get on top of...
Well, hello and welcome to The Dunking. I'm your host, Super Sexy D. If that doesn't sit right with you, you can call me Dan. That was my rapper name back in the 90s. Not Dan, Super Sexy D. But anyway, my point here isn't talk about my rap career. It's a talk about Potholer 54 and his epic levels of honesty when he's debunking Graham Hancock in his second video on the matter when he goes after Göbekli Tepe. But we're not really going to talk too much about Göbekli Tepe because Potholer really is dishonest in other places, so we'll talk about that there. But before we get too far into that, I want to point out that Potholer is kind of a throwback to the early days of the Atheist Wars. Him and a lot of his fans, as a matter of fact. And for those of you who weren't there for the early days of the Atheist Wars and the early days of social media, it was basically two big debate battlegrounds. It was creationism versus evolutionism, and there was job, no it's not. The creationism versus evolution became like the atheism versus Christian thing, and it became like entrenched and became very, very popular and a very common debate thing. And one of the things that we saw was the atheist community, despite claiming to be scientific and intellectually honest, would frequently engage in extreme levels of intellectual dishonesty, a lot of times not even because they meant to, but led by a handful of individuals who would throw bullshit out there. Perfect example of this is the Zeitgeist thing, the Zeitgeist documentary. A lot of atheists were quick to call that out, but a lot of other ones would share it because confirmation bias says, it's making fun of Christianity. Well, the hell with Christians. So it was intellectual dishonesty was passing as a form of debate. And that has kind of carried on in a lot of ways where if you are dealing with a flat earther or a creationist or a Graham Hancock, you are justified in being a little shitty. And a quick way to tell an intellectually dishonest one of these types is if they're acting like they're treating science as a dogma, hit them with the old, you act like science is a religion thing. Now, when you say that, obviously your point is you're treating science as a religion, as in you just trust it blindly with confirmation bias. You don't fact check things. You're basically trusting someone else to filter your information for you, the same as they trust their pastor. You're putting your faith in science. That's obviously the metaphor that's being drawn here, the parallel. Nobody would not see that. But if they go down the whole, well, atheism doesn't have a, or science doesn't have a God, science doesn't have a belief in an afterlife, science is falsifiable, they're deliberately evading your point. And they know they're doing it, but they're doing it anyway in order to maintain a win. It's a quick way to tell atheists that it's being intellectually honest with one that's trying to maintain a position. So I have seen that Potholer and a number of his fans are in that latter camp, that they would argue till they're blue in the face about the color of the sky if they felt like it was going to get them somewhere. Okay, having said that, let's get on to the actual video.
That's why the conclusion that there was nothing older than Clovis in North America was changed when archaeologists discovered pre-Clovis artifacts.
Well, that's not exactly true, is it? I mean, they found a lot of evidence that supported the idea that there were people before Clovis, a lot of artifacts, a lot of things that were dated to be long before the Clovis people were supposed to have shown up, but it was battled against by the Clovis police or the Clovis mafia, a group of stodgy old archaeologists that wanted nothing to do with the changing of this. And that happened for about 30 years, not as soon as... But, you know, maybe I'm being too quick to judge him here. So he talks about Clovis once more in this video a little bit longer. Let's let him see what he says there, and maybe he'll get honest then, I'm sure.
Now, in anticipation of the posts that some of you are already writing, of course, there are a lot of fusty old archaeology professors with fixed ideas, just like in all sciences. Anyone who thinks otherwise hasn't watched my channel, where I'm constantly correcting old professors and PhDs who cling to dogmatic beliefs. But even the most dogmatic and determined professor, who told his students that nothing would be found below the Clovis layer in North America, had to eat his words when archaeologists did find artifacts below the Clovis layer.
Now, Potholer, you know that that's not the case. For over 30 years, they had published artifacts that they just basically said, oh, these aren't really artifacts. Those marks on them, oh, those aren't human-manipulated marks, even though if they were found at another site, but it was a Clovis site, those would definitely be human marks. But this is a pre-Clovis site, so nope. Clovis first, baby, all the way. And that kept going for a very long time, 30 plus years, right? So when you say as soon as they found artifacts that were below the Clovis layer, they found artifacts below the Clovis layer in fucking 79 was when they were first published, and it was 2011 before the debate was put to bed. So I'm curious as to how you could even go down this whole road here. There's numerous archaeologists that will talk about the Clovis police, the Clovis mafia. Well, I'm not so curious as to how you could go down this road. It's pretty obvious to manipulate your audience, right? We have archaeologists like Tom Dillahaye, who was involved with this stuff at the time, and he says that, quote, the environment was clearly toxic and clearly impeded science, unquote. So you can claim that it's like, oh, it was just changed immediately, but what we had for 30 plus years, and this is why people like Hancock and myself will bring up Clovis first, was a systematic opposition to new evidence being presented as to, in regards to the peopling of America. That's period, end of story. That is what happened. There's scientific record. I'll post numerous links down below. And, you know, here's a tiny little clip from Dr. Bill Farley from Archaeology Tube.
It's called the Clovis First Theory. And it's got the word first in it because it implies that those were the first people to exist in North and South America. In the 1980s and 1990s, sites started to be discovered. Some of them had been discovered long ago, but they started to be seriously considered that had radiocarbon dates that came from before those series of events occurred. So either they were too old to be Clovis, or they were too old for the ice-free corridor to be exposed, or perhaps even too old for Beringia to be exposed. And these sites came to be known as pre-Clovis sites. Here's the place where Hancock is onto a kernel of truth. There was a very strong debate within archaeology in the 1980s and 1990s about these sites. It took a long time for those sites to be accepted. Because this was an extraordinary claim, it required extraordinary evidence, something I'll come back to later. Were some archaeologists unfair to the archaeologists who were claiming pre-Clovis sites? Absolutely. My old PhD advisor used to call them the quote-unquote Clovis Mafia, which was this group of old-school archaeologists who really felt strongly about the Clovis First Theory and didn't want to change their minds.
This is an archaeologist saying that. And just to clarify his position on the thing.
So there's some irony in using this as a criticism for the argument that archaeologists don't want to change their minds. It is true that those theories were not accepted easily and lightly and without great evidence in the 80s and 90s, but they were eventually accepted and they have now become the standard principle experience for archaeologists.
This is his video debunking Hancock, okay? He is weighing in on the Clovis First thing and he flat out says that, yes, eventually they overcame it, but it took over 30 years, okay? That's the reality of it. Now, he says that it was accepted in the 90s, and in the sphere of archaeology, in the younger people community, it was. But the old stodgy old bastards stuck in their ways, remembering the schools from the 60s that they went to, those guys kept to Clovis First for a very long time, Planck's principle style. Science didn't advance until some funerals happened. That's the fact. So Potholer omitting this and making it seem like science just progressed as soon as the new evidence shows up is intellectually dishonest, but again, that old atheist thing, he can't have this compared to a religion in any way, shape, or form, so he has to pretend that the scientific method completely removes emotion and completely removes humanity, well, almost completely, but in reality, that's not the case at all. Quite frequently, we see things like this.
That would only be true if science was the same as religion, where the conclusion is an immutable belief that can't be overturned. In religion, or any kind of dogma, evidence is changed to be consistent with the dogmatic conclusion.
Yes, that is usually a difference between religion and science, is that usually your religion will just make evidence fit its ideology, and science will usually make its ideology fit the evidence. However, in the case of Clovis, we had a exact opposite of that. We had religion masquerading as science, the religion of the Clovis First. And by your own metrics, or a dogmatic belief at any rate, if you will allow me to read from this here thing written by somebody smarter than me. This is discussing the first archaeologist to publish peer-reviewed paper on pre-Clovis artifacts, a man named Jacques Cinq-Mars. But relatively few of Cinq-Mars's peers shared his confidence. And as I began regularly attending archaeological conferences in the years following that trip to the Bluefish Caves, I saw what Cinq-Mars was up against. Sitting in the halls with Canadian and American researchers, I witnessed what happened when archaeologists presented data that contradicted the Clovis First model. Often a polite bemusement spread through the room, as if the audience was dealing with some crackpot uncle, or the atmosphere grew testy and tense as someone began grilling the presenter. But once or twice, the mask of professional respect slipped completely. I heard laughter and snickering from the room. Tom Dillahay remembers such conferences as well. Some Clovis First people had a suffocating air of defiance and superiority at times, he said. In general, the critics focused their attacks on two major fronts. They questioned whether key artifacts at proposed pre-Clovis sites were really made by humans, as opposed to natural processes, and they pored over presentations and reports for any possible errors in datings. At the Bluefish Caves, the place where Jacques Cinq-Mars first published a paper about, the crucial evidence consisted of animal bones that were dated to around 24,000 years ago and seemed to be cut, shaped, or flaked by humans. So critics focused on those. They diminished Cinq-Mars' identification of butchery marks and tools and offered alternative explanations. Rock fall from the caves, they suggested, had fractured the bones, leaving splinters that merely looked like human artifacts. Or large carnivores had chomped on a carcass, producing grooves that resembled cut marks or fragments mirroring artifacts. Some skeptics even suggested that living mammoths could have taken bad tumbles nearby, accidentally splintering limb bones. Other critics wanted to see multiple lines of evidence for the presence of early humans at Bluefish Caves, including dated hearths with stone tools in close association. So as you can see here, this basically was not a scientific endeavor at this point. It was a very religious one. And that Jacques Cinq-Mars, it basically ruined his career. It didn't completely ruin it, but it sure fucking drove it into the ground. And he was sacrificed on that altar, and this was just the first guy to do that. There were other people who basically had their careers ruined, and numerous papers that were published that were mocked, laughed, derided, picked apart pointlessly, dogmatically. So I think it's kind of important to point this out here, because Potholer again is trying to hold the sciences above religion. Yes, it is, but people aren't above people, and religious people and science people are both capable of doing the exact same shitty things. Confirmation bias, obfuscation, manipulation, deliberate omissions, manipulating their audience with selective words, demonization of other people, general twat-pullery.
If archaeologists were stuck in dogma and never changed, as Hancock claims, we'd still be stuck with the archaeology that he and I learned in the 1960s.
Oh, archaeologists never change. That's what Hancock claims? Isn't that what you just said?
If archaeologists were stuck in dogma and never changed, as Hancock claims...
Okay, so that's a little bit of, well, not true. You know, there's this guy, I was just watching this video of his, I was actually cutting it into pieces, and he said something... Here, I'll just let him talk about this, like, false dichotomy of choice that eliminates the more subtle third option.
Give two people two choices, one of them your own belief, and the other a far more absurd option, and ask them to choose which one makes more sense. Archaeologists find this simplistic choice between two unsupported ideas not offensive, that's too strong a word, but laughable.
And when you look at that, one of these options, archaeologists never change their position, that sounds kind of absurd, doesn't it? It's almost like you force them to accept your option instead of seeing the more subtle choice that Hancock originally presented. Huh, weird that. And that's not even getting to the meat of this clip yet. You're saying that archaeology changes what it teaches kids in school. And you're right. We don't learn the same shit we learned in the 60s in archaeology class today. I went to school in the 80s and 90s, right? And in the 80s and 90s, we did still learn Clovis First, though. Yeah. That's all we learned about was the freaking Volantide Ice Sheet, or the fuck it's called, and the Bering Land Bridge, and all this bullshit. That was all they talked about when it talked about the peopling of Americas. I was 4 years old when they published that paper saying the first time with carbon-dated fucking artifacts to older than Clovis. And... it was just dismissed, rejected, and I was not taught that, even though I went to school 20 fucking years later. So this whole idea of, oh yeah, you know, this is always better than religion, science is, though science should be better than religion usually, but in this case, it was acting just like a fucking religion. But he could never in a million years admit that because of that old school atheist war debate still in his brain. So while what I learned in school was basically the same as what he learned in school in regards to the peopling of Americas, much evidence had been found in the meantime, but the dogmatic, dare I say, religious attitude of the scientists involved kept it from being brought forward, kept it from being recognized. It kept being dismissed as bullshit, as not evidence. I wonder why someone like Graham Hancock would hold this up and say, hey, look what scientists do sometimes, it's fucked. And I wonder why you would be completely unwilling to address at all the possibility that he might be just a tiny bit right. Dr. Farley had no problem admitting that there was a kernel of truth here. But he's not an intellectually dishonest person.
None of these discoveries contradict our understanding of history. They only contradict our previous understanding of history. As Ian Juby noted, conclusions in archaeology, like all sciences, change to be consistent with the latest evidence.
It changes its position with the accepted evidence. The accepted evidence. When they dig their heels in and deny the evidence, even though it is evidence, and even though the next generation of archaeologists come along and be like, man, those guys were fucking dogmatic. Don't bring that up. We're just going to ignore all that to death. And yeah, I know I'm harping a hell of a lot on the fact that he has completely misled everyone about Clovis, but look at how many clips he's made that I'm responding to here. The guy completely bullshat his way through one of archaeologists' darkest chapters in modern day history.
Sorry, but fake and fabricated evidence doesn't count. It may convince a Netflix audience, but it doesn't impress scientific journals.
Yes, if you want to use bullshit evidence, you probably are not going to be able to put that in a science journal. You're probably going to have to take that to Netflix or, I don't know, YouTube. Like if you wanted to, for instance, say that Clovis first wasn't really dogmatic and that archaeology just grabbed the new evidence and moved on forward, you might have to take that to YouTube and not put that in a peer-reviewed journal because your colleagues might rip you a new asshole for deliberately lying. Be crazy, huh? Just ignoring the reality of the stuff. Why do you word things like this anyway? Why do you word them in these like sneaky, subtle ways of basically almost completely lying, but not quite?
So why the rather odd wording? As I said in my last video, it's all about impressions and images.
Well, this channeling him's working pretty good. I can hear him pretty clearly. So, potholer, do you do this to manipulate your audience? Is that the point? That's kind of fucked up, man. Is this a subconscious thing, or is this something that you do deliberately?
The wording is no accident. In the media, words are carefully thought out to convey a particular standpoint.
Damn, dude, that's pretty messed up. Although I did notice that in my last video, you just kept making these like subtle falsehoods and deliberately omitting important details like you have here. What's the whole point of that? I mean, you nailed Hancock on numerous like actual facts that he got wrong. So why do you like do that?
It's just one manipulation of the audience, but little by little, each line builds up this picture.
Ah, yes, the picture that Hancock is a drooling idiot that lies all the time. Got it. Yeah, you seem to have done a good job painting that picture. I mean, you did have to use a dishonest brush a few times, but you certainly have convinced your audience anyway that Hancock can say nothing right. Not even when he points out the times that he is right. You're not even going to let him have those, are you? No siree, Bob.
The rest of the program is speculation about star alignments and carved symbols, and people often complain that I post these transcripts with not enough time to read them, if only there was some kind of a pause button on your computer, like a space bar, that would stop the video for as long as you need to read them. Oh dear, too late. There are lots of coulds and maybes and what-ifs related to cherry picks of the eclectic mix of carved wild animals, penises, pillars, all of different ages, and the various alignments that fit various theories. Could all those animal carvings actually be telling us something? But are they serpents, or could they represent something else? Could Göbekli Tepe be even more than that? What if its architect sought to leave behind a message of the greatest importance? What if this mysterious complex wasn't just a place of rituals? What if it's more than that? Is it possible they share a common inspiration? Is it possible that the great building projects in both places, perhaps represented by those stone pillars? So we can take that perhaps to be Scorpius. Symbols on the stone might represent asterisms. But I'm not really interested in speculation. I'm only interested in what we can establish as fact.
Only interested in established fact. Well, that does not sound at all scientific to me, sir. That sounds as stuck in the mud as somebody saying God did it. You are worthless to science when you are willing to say this is how it is, period. And you're well aware of that. And as I've told my audience numerous times, scientists don't normally communicate like this. When they talk to other scientists, it's when they talk to pseudoscientists that they get out that fucking bullshit hammer of, we need to know for a fact. We don't deal in facts and science, you numbnut, and you know that. You deal in data. And you take the data and you make inferences and hypotheses and models and theories. And eventually, if you do a real good job, you might end up with something that becomes a law. Not because it graduated from theory to law, but because it so well describes the happenings of this thing that it always is applicable. But you know all this already, but you don't care about any of that because you deal in facts today. Fucking God. Yeah, you deal with facts like the fact that you just lumped in Dr. Sweatman's peer-reviewed published archaeoastronomy paper in with a bunch of other ideas and spitballing, and it just could be hypotheses. And you know what? It is a could-be hypotheses, like the skull cult is a could-be hypotheses at Göbekli Tepe. You talk about the evidence for that. But you don't talk about this as evidence. You don't even mention that it's a peer-reviewed published paper. And you know, when Stefan Milo failed to mention that, it irked me. When Mini Minuteman didn't mention it, I felt like he probably just didn't see that as such. But I am like 99.999% sure, Potholer, you are fucking well aware this is a peer-reviewed published paper. But just like admitting Clovis first is a bad day in the day of science, you think that paper's a bad day in the day of science. So just like this Bonaroo John Hopps over here who says this kind of bullshit, fucking fuck. It's not up to you to tell your audience what is and isn't peer-reviewed when you're presenting the data. Your job is to present the data fairly, at least it should be, unless you want to be lumped into the same category as guys like Hancock who just make a narrative, not an actual truth-telling. If that's the kind of person you want to be lumped in with, by all means, I need more fodder. Please make more videos.
So I would love to hear from Hancock fans to see what you think. Please don't just write comments saying my video is bullshit or it's an ad hominem attack against Hancock.
I didn't do either of those two things. I saw a third option and I took it. I made a video and I informed you of it. Now, you refused to watch the video, and that's fine, but you can't very well then say, I'd love to hear from Hancock fans, if you won't give them the time of day to actually watch the content that they make comparable to yours at any rate. You want them to argue with you in your comment section. And you know, just last night, I had somebody commenting on my community tab, and his comments got caught as spam, two of them. And there was no reason for it, except for we were arguing, and he was posting a lot. That doesn't happen to me. It's my page. I can fucking post whatever I want. But he can't. But that's, so you want to keep the arguments on your page and then not look at other people's positions outside of there. Definitely don't want to watch a video about it. Yeah, this is a dishonest bunch of bullshit.
The funny thing was that no one disagreed that Hancock had fabricated his evidence and they didn't even try to defend it. What they objected to was me showing these fabrications on a public forum, either because it undermined his work or because exposing fakery is somehow a personal attack.
Well, there's that false dichotomy that you talked about again. I didn't have any problem with you exposing his falsehoods, nor did I have a problem with the personal attacks. I had the problem with your falsehoods. Now, you hadn't heard from me at the time that you made this video, but I'm sure I'm not the first person to say anything like that to you. But, okay, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not sure about that. Maybe I am the first person who said anything like that to you. I am sure on how you react to being told, hey, this clip that you knowingly took out of context, you took it out of context. I know how you react to that kind of shit. So you'll forgive me if I say, this is as bullshit as anything that any Atlantis hunter has ever said. Paola right here is stroking his ego with zero intention of following through with this.
So I'm not optimistic that anyone will try to defend Hancock's fabrications and omissions in episode 5 either. But please do try. As always, I'm more than willing to correct my video if I got something wrong.
Well, that's a fabrication and a half now, isn't it? What you will do is you'll refuse to watch the criticisms against you. You'll require me to type out the entire fucking transcript of my video into the comment section of your video, and that way you can ignore the points that you want to address and address the points that you want to ignore, or vice versa. Well, you know what I'm saying. And then, which is basically what you wanted me to do, which is just laughable. So when I bring up just one point, you would completely ignore that and dance around. If I bring up one major point and say three other things at the same time, you will spend all day long talking about those three points and ignore the major point. And you did it so many times that you are the only person that I've responded to that I will talk to the way that I am to you now.
Now, you may well ask, but what harm do these innocent beliefs in a lost civilization do? Surely they're not hurting anyone, are they? Well, on a practical level, the problem is exemplified by what happened at Gunung Padang, where Hancock imagined there were secret rectangular chambers underneath a megalithic site which he claimed is a 20,000-year-old pyramid.
Now, did you notice who he just implied is causing the problem at Gunung Padang? The place where Hancock said there were these underground chambers, right? So he's blaming Hancock from this. He's heavily implying it. Now, pay close attention here, because what he does is really, really gross.
Other people believe this too, including the then president of Indonesia, Bambang Yudhoyono. Because if it was true, then Indonesia would be home to the oldest civilization in the world. So, of course, it became a source of immense national pride. So much so that the president assigned a large budget and encouraged digging underneath the site to reveal this supposed lost civilization. And this had two unfortunate effects. First, it diverted funds from real archaeological investigations, such as the nearby Pawon Cave site, which had been home to hunter-gatherers about 9,500 years ago. Excavations here tell us far more about the people who lived at that time than made-up TV stories about ancient pyramid builders.
Once again, he's painting out Hancock as the reason that all this is happening at Gunung Padang. Keep paying attention to that. Here it is. It's the TV special versus archaeology, right? Archaeology that's for real happens over here. TV special archaeology happens over here. Ignore the false dichotomy. I've already hit that one like three times, so we're done hammering at that.
Secondly, with the president's backing, an army of around 500 untrained volunteers came to dig up the site and get to the lost civilization they believed was buried underneath, even though telemetry showed that this was just an extinct volcano with no evidence of any man-made structures. The project was called the Red and White Glory Operation, named after the colours of the Indonesian flag. To speed things along, President Yudhoyono even sent in soldiers to help and offered earth-moving equipment. Archaeologists, of course, were horrified. One of their complaints was that the soldiers and untrained amateurs were using hoes, no, this type of hoe, to hack at the ground, and were removing megalithic stones with no record of where they'd been laid. A World Heritage site was in danger of being vandalized.
Well, that's kind of weird. I was just watching Netflix the other day and Zahi Hawass was on there having a bunch of dudes digging in the desert with hoes and nobody was complaining about that. But anyway, you know, when you start getting into this whole the president doesn't understand the basic value of archaeology, that's not anybody's fault but the president. Somebody needs to like step in there and educate him maybe, but like he's the one who's the dumbass. You can't blame somebody else for him sending in people with hoes. He may have done that at any site that he got a hard-on for, since he doesn't seem to understand that, like, you know, recording where rocks are located might be valuable. He might not be the guy that you want running this kind of stuff, period, not just if you're looking for Atlantis. So conflating those two is a little bit disingenuous, but big surprise that it happened here.
Fortunately, when a new president was elected, he stopped the uncontrolled dig and preserved the site for future generations.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff that happened since November when Ancient Apocalypse first aired. We had a president digging in the ground and then people protesting it, and then they stopped it with the election of a new president. Fuck, man, that's all in like 6 months. Oh, no, wait. That happened in 2014. Hancock had nothing to do with this. It was Dr. Hillman Nadi Wajaja that influenced the president to dig around that site. Hancock latched onto it because he saw what was going on there. He's not the one that influenced the president. Another Indonesian man is the one that influenced the president. But you don't really want to portray it that way. Let's blame Hancock for something that happened 10 fucking years ago. No, not completely blame him. We'll just completely infer that it was the TV show that caused it. And this is the problem because, well, Hancock's the one that said these chambers were here. No, Hillman Nadi Wajaja is the guy that said those chambers were there. But you don't want to portray it that way because this isn't a hit piece on Dr. Nadi Wajaja. There's no fucking traction to be gained from that. This was disgusting to me. This part right here was really just gross because the way that he misrepresented Hancock in the last episode where he's talking about the pillars and how Hancock says that when he dove in the water, he found a couple of pillars. He's like, ah, oh, he's claiming he discovered the pillars. And he will not admit that that's bullshit on his part. But in this situation here, he does the exact same thing times 10. He just keeps building up this bullshit case. Not quite full-fledged lies, but goddamn, is it some heavy inference. What is the impression that you get? Absolutely not the reality of the situation. You blame somebody who wasn't even fucking on the site when this was going down. Jesus fucking Christ.
Are we really willing to say it's okay to fabricate evidence and that exposing these fabrications is hateful? Really? Is that the lesson we want our children to learn?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't want my kids to learn nothing like that. As a matter of fact, I would teach my kids that, you know, even scientists are subject to lie and engage in dogmatic fucking bullshit sometimes because they're humans. They're not science embodied in flesh. This isn't a religion where one of you or all of you gets to crucify yourself on the cross of science and your ego is now gone and now everything you do is, oh, data-driven perfection. Sorry, dude, it don't work that way. You still eat, poop, and fuck. All right, so this is the world that we live in. You're just a monkey like the rest of us. Just like Graham Hancock, you are capable of misrepresenting the fuck out of your opposition in order to make your case, as we have seen yet again. And one thing I would ask you is, do you really want to raise your kids to believe that it's okay to say, hey, come and criticize what I just said here, but I'm not going to look at it? I would never, ever in a million years want my kids to find out that I did something like that. It's disgusting. And I'm not a scientist. Well, thank you very much for watching this far. I'm sorry to be a little harsh on Potholer. I'm trying to roll back my snark a little, and that's why I wanted to deal with Potholer here right after dealing with Kaylee, because I have strong feelings towards people that claim to represent science and claim to educate people about science and deliberately misinform. That is gross. Very, 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 very gross. This is like belongs on Ancient Aliens levels of misrepresentation as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, thanks a lot for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Don't click on my videos and bells. And if you do lots of things, then I'll get more people following. And then the next video I make will have even more twat pullers watching. It'll be tremendous. Have a good evening.